opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Prairie Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Well, hello there, all listeners far and wide. This is Jim Newman, your host for a brand new recording program on KCIW Radio. It's called Our Veteran Community. And the purpose of the show is to highlight the veterans who may live across the street or next door or downstairs from you, because we have per capita one of the largest veteran communities in the entire state of Oregon. I am very honored today to have a person that I call a friend and a fellow radiophile, Mr. Steve Braun, who sits in the chair at KURY Radio as announcer, DJ, man about town. Everybody probably knows him, so I thought that would be a fitting way to start this program. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
this
it's
is fantastic.
Isn't it great? One radio guy at a different radio station. You know, it can't get much better. So,
and true. And I've been following you with all of your endeavors too over the years. I mean,
yeah, it's been a crazy 27 years.
It has. And I thought you were here longer than me, but I think I got back in was it 91 after being gone 7 or 8 years. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's delve into your life a little bit. This is not like the show. This is your life, but people are kind of curious by nature. So let's talk about, where were you born?
Well, my goodness. I was born in Dallas, Texas. Imagine that.
Wow. That's a...
that was to a Kansas-bred father and a Wyoming-bred mother. And the occasion was he was a captive in a seminary learning to be a minister of the gospel. And their oldest child just decided to come along, you know.
Funny how that works out.
Yeah, crazy stuff. And so we're not there very long. Yeah. We were there till maybe the early 60s and then relocated to western Nebraska for the first 9 years of my life.
Flatlands.
Yes, sugar beets, you know, sand hills.
Yeah. So, at any rate, so Texas, kind of flat. Nebraska, kind of flat. And then where to after that?
Well, through an interesting set of affairs, my father had an opportunity to candidate in a couple of places, Homer, Alaska, or Brookings, Oregon. He came to Brookings, Oregon in the early winter of 1967. And I can still remember the phone call to my mother. Came out here solo, and he says, you know, I won't be going to Homer, Alaska. I think I've found the place. And so consequently, a year later, we packed up and caravaned out here. And, you know, I've been here ever since, except for a brief hiatus in the Midwest.
Okay. So what was, I mean, Brookings has that effect on people. What was the draw for your dad at the time?
You know, all I can really remember is him saying it's just beautiful. There's all these rivers. The rivers are clear. The ocean. He had driven through here in the early 50s following his graduation from a college in Minnesota and was really struck by the area. Of course, this was before 101 was here. It was the old Cartmanville Highway and took many, many pictures up and down. He always thought it would be nice to live here. And when he came out here, he became acquainted with several people that were just like almost instant friends. It was raining like crazy, so he knew wide open, you know, eyes wide open going into it. And, you know, just fell in love with the area and the people and the opportunity.
Yeah, what's not to fall in love with?
Country church, a lot of commercial fishermen, yeah. A lot of loggers. This is before, quote, Brookings had really been discovered as a touristy area.
Right.
And he just fell in love with the people. You know, their problems were very easy to identify, and they were very transparent. And unlike the Midwest, and he was excited to come out here and bring his family along with him.
All right. So was it a big culture shock moving from Nebraska to Brookings, especially in the educational aspect of your life?
The hardest part for me was learning how to pronounce that Calmeopsis or whatever. I really don't remember anybody referring to that school as K-School. But I came here halfway through the third grade, And fortunately for me, I had a teacher who all she cared about was our art, and drove a lot of the parents crazy because we weren't learning math or English. But I loved drawing sailing ships, and she was always patting me on the back. And I think the rest of my, English, math, spelling all reflected my art prowess because, I was getting straight A's pretty much. I remember in the fourth grade, one of the gentlemen, Jim Phelps, who later on was the principal at Calmeopsis, was in my dad's church, and my dad couldn't figure out why I did so poorly in his class. I said, he's not into art, Dad. He's not into art.
So this is an interesting theme. You were doing a lot of drawings of sea vessels, right?
I love drawing, John Paul Jones, all the old sailing frigates, loved drawing pictures of ships for some reason. Yeah, many, many, many times. And
not a far stretch that you ended up in the in the Navy, right?
Right on the beach. Well, yeah. Probably a really good point. I had, back in the Midwest, I had a couple of uncles. My uncle Ernest and Lewis, born in 17 and 19, the youngest of a family of six, German immigrants back in the day, who both volunteered to go in the Navy. And as children, they would invite us over. They were both, never married, farmers, hardworking farmers. And they would invite us over and have us try on their sailor suits. And they had saved everything from Victory in Europe Day, VJ Day. They had all the cigarettes, the Camels, and the beers, and everything. They kept
it. Yeah.
And to this day, my niece has all that set up in a display, kind of a family remembrance display that she shares with the community back in Kansas.
That is cool.
But that planted a seed early on at the USN. The Navy was the place to be.
Right. So you graduated from high school, and were you enlisted right into the Navy right after that, or?
Well, basically what happened was, I graduated in 1977 from Brookings Harbor High School, and we had our counselor's appointments. They were trying to do a good job back then, trying to direct our futures. And I had, my junior year had expressed interest in the Navy. And so you know what happens, the minute you call that 800 number or stop in, it happened to be in Coos Bay, right?
Yeah, they're on you like flies on you know what.
you're a commodity, And I'll never forget, it was just nonstop. So I had signed up to take the AFES exam in Coos Bay, took it, came back, said I could do whatever I wanted in the Navy except for nuclear because I didn't have enough math. I had a general math component. Ironically, 1977 in Oregon was the last year for no competency exams.
Interesting.
So it was the last of the old school, basically. And then in 1978, it just threw everybody crazy. In fact, I understand that the schools lost half the records in 78.
Oh, geez.
And it made it real tough on people that wanted to graduate. But it was very interesting. So I in November of 1976, 8 months before I graduated, I went into the delayed entry program. Okay. And ironically, they were turning the clock back November 20th of 1976. I kept watching them push the clock back before midnight to get people in before the Vietnam era GI Bill expired.
Oh.
That was a big push, And one of the, recruiters always promised the moon. And not really, how many kids at 18, really, if they're not fully turned on, you're still thinking about your first girlfriend, your car, whatever.
Right.
That turned out to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I signed up and did the diligence. And
cool. Yeah. Now, where did you end up going through basic training and ultimately get stationed at?
Well, basic training. Didn't really have a choice. Basically, San Diego, RTC, NTC was still very much in full swing.
Okay.
And so July 5th of 1977, following my graduation, drove to Portland, got on an airplane with about 15 other fellows that were soon to be recruits, and we showed up at the San Diego airport, flew into San Diego airport,
right. And
I'll never forget, we got formed up alongside a bunch of Marines that had showed up.
Oh, Lordy.
And the buses were different colors, and the drill instructors behaved completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
We got yelled at a little bit, but nothing like those poor Marines that had showed up. It was very, very interesting. So RTC NTC was my first experience. in the Navy. And what was interesting about it is we show up, we're making friendships, you know how it is, you strike out, you find people in common that you get along with. And, 3 o'clock the next morning, the garbage can rolls down the middle of the barracks. We've not been formed into companies yet. And we're told to be outside within, some outrageous amount of time, 60 seconds. I think I was one of the last ones out of the barrack. It was like, you're thinking, what did I get myself into? And so we go outside, we get formed up, everybody gets their hair cut off, and we get these uniforms, and instantly nobody can recognize anybody that they had had these alliances with. And then all before we're formed into a company, before boot camp ever starts, we go to a swim test. And they want to make sure we can swim. And we had a whole contingent from Chicago that, they didn't even want to jump in the water. Didn't even want to get close to the edge of the pool.
How did that work out?
Well, it didn't, because what had happened, you got pulled back and you got a special 2-week exercise in how to swim before you. Wow. So it was an extra 2 weeks. And I'll never forget that. And then shortly after that, we got formed in our companies. I was Company 170, had an engineman chief. ENC Connors was our boot camp, drill instructor. Quite a guy, mm-hmm. quite a guy.
So you made it through boot camp, obviously. And now how does that work? You get assigned a ship to be on?
Very interesting. What happened was I had signed up. I mentioned at AFES, Armed Forces Examination and Entry Station, they told me that I qualified I still remember my AFQT was 94. Okay. And they said, you qualify for anything you want to do except for nuclear. And I said, well, I've always liked airplanes. Of course, I'm in the Navy. I've always liked airplanes. And they said, well, we're going to give you this general designation of AVA-1, which is avionics. It takes into place aviation electronic warfare, aviation electronic technician, aviation, all kinds of different categories.
Right.
And so I said, okay, I'm open to any one of these. So they ended up giving me they ended up giving me a classification where I was basically working on the radar, weapon system components. And I had no idea where I was going to end up at that point. But right. I had to be assigned to a school.
Sure.
So they sent me to Millington, Tennessee, just north of Memphis.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, I flew into Memphis, Tennessee all by myself at about 2 a.m. in the morning. And I had a guy that picked me up and took me out to the base. And, you're talking this kid from Brookings, Of course, boot camp had done a pretty good job of opening my eyes to the possibilities of the U.S. Navy. And got out there. And got all lined up and proceeded to go through a preliminary course called Basic Electricity and Electronics. They wanted us to understand, trigonometry, things like that, and basic theories of electricity, which I really never, ever used in my future work. Everything that I did in my future work was O-level maintenance, working basically R&Ring things down to the box and then sending the box into eye level. But nonetheless, we had to do the BE&E before we could get into AVA, which was our aviation electronics course. Very interesting course.
All in Tennessee. See, people seem to think that because you're in a branch of the service that deals with water, you would stay by water. Well, Tennessee is not really known for being close to the ocean.
No, not at all. And it's interesting. I think that base is pretty much decommissioned now, but... for one reason or another, it was there. And of course, we had folks coming in from Great Lakes and from all over, wherever mm-hmm. the Navy had their training facilities. And what was interesting about it was we had a big computer called Jim Jim. And this was back in the era when a computer, 77, pretty much would take up a whole room.
Yeah.
But they had Jim Jim was about half the size of this room, probably 5x8, 5x10. Yeah. And Jim Jim would take into account your basic demographics, where you were from, your GPA, your AFQT, and then it would assign a time for you to graduate. This person has this measure of intelligence. They will graduate. This is the amount of progress they'll make every day. And if you weren't living up to Jim Jim's expectations, it was all programmed instruction. You're familiar with programmed instruction.
Right.
Where you take a test, then you remedialize 2 or 3 times. I think the government loves stuff like that.
Oh, of course.
But... anyway, long story short, if you weren't living up to Jim Jim's expectations, it would spit out a few names every day.
Oh,
and
boy.
Guess what? Guess who was in charge of the Navy schools?
I have no idea.
The USMC.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm having a great time. We're enjoying Memphis. And ironically, this was I think I showed up there in September or October of 1977. So this was just really right after Elvis Presley had mm-hmm. overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, Memphis was an eye-opener. It was a really cool place to live.
Great barbecue,
you
too.
Know, great barbecue.
Music.
And, yeah, and Overton Square. I mean, it was just a great place. And my parents from out here had friends, so I was all over, and they were showing me all over. And, you know, my last thing on my mind really was, should you be doing well in school? Although I thought I was, you know how it is, you think you're doing well,
yeah.
And then you get the call. And you go in and you see the gold star or the silver star on the Marine Corps officers.
Yeah.
And
can you say that again without touching?
And then you go into the office and you see the silver star, the gold star, oak leaf on the Marine Corps officers.
Right. You know something serious.
And he looks at you and he says, "You know what?" He says, "I got to look at your orders. And you're scheduled to go shore duty in San Diego." He goes, "You know what I'm going to do if you don't finish this up?" He said, "You're about 2 weeks behind. If you don't get on track and finish this up, I'm going to make sure you go to the fleet and all you do is chip paint for the rest of your enlistment."
Oh, wow.
And he said, "I can do that." And he wasn't exactly talking to me. I mean, you know, the poor producer here would be asking me to speak it over because he was at about, ear blasting decibels.
90 decibels, yeah.
And, I was like, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir." I stopped working on my Olds 442 at the on-base mechanic shop. I stopped going off base and doing this and doing that, and I knuckled down, and it was all serious stuff. Quit taking two or three remedials on each test, started studying, and graduated about a week ahead of time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, graduated about a week ahead of time, and it's amazing how a little clear direction, clear communication can influence one's outcome.
Lacking a boot up the butt, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that was that. And by golly, the guy was telling me the truth. I had not seen my orders, and I pulled shore duty orders at Fightertown, USA, Miramar, San Diego area.
Right.
It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you know, starry eyes. Everybody said, "Man, how did you do that?" I had talked to people that had enlisted to get shore duty, re-enlisted right. After a four-year enlistment.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, he was telling me the truth. I was very grateful. So I packed up my 1970 Olds 442 W30.
And I know you talk a lot about that on the other radio station.
Yeah, I hit the road, Jack. And on the way, I went down through Little Rock, Arkansas, and then stopped into Houston, saw my favorite cousins, and somehow I made it to San Diego in that thing. Man alive.
But, right.
I remember following the green line once I got there, checked in, and, you know, starry-eyed, get to work on F-14 Tomcats. That was my destination, my final.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of this segment of your military service. What was your biggest or best takeaway from those years?
Best takeaway, the input equaled the output. Every little effort you made was, you know, there was an equal and measurable output, and made some really, really, really good friends. You know, I was never in a war zone, but, you know, when you're learning the same information, you're working, you find out, you know, people you can count on, you find out, you know, true aspects of friendship and camaraderie ship.
Mm-hmm.
I hear folks speak of their experiences like in a war situation, and I can see how that could only be maximized, where you people have your back and you're taking care of people and they're taking care of you. I had the same experience.
Yeah, it's definitely a bonding experience.
It really was.
For sure. So you get out of the Navy. What's next?
Well, I'll tell you what, got out of the Navy. It's funny because here I am at barely 21, few days left before I turn 22.
Wow.
Thinking that surely 37 is over the, there's no way I'd be over the hill at 37 years of age. How could I possibly stay in the Navy? And that's when I needed somebody in my family to kick me in the rear and say, "Steve, it's going to come up like a deer in the headlights, man." And it did.
Yeah.
So what I did, essentially, I had a 2-year obligation in the reserves.
Okay.
And so came back up to to Brookings. I essentially always enjoyed welding. I had several friends that did welding, and I had paid my down payment for welding school, Tulsa Welding School, back in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I come back up here. My dad has resigned his work at the church. And long story short is I had a buddy that had just got out of the Marine Corps. And so Steve just kind of going with his feelings, thought, you know, my buddy was like trying to get on at Champion International, which was a pretty good place to work back in the day. I mean, you started at like $11 an hour.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah, back in 81, because I got out in July of 81. And so we had a friendly bet that, you know, he was going to get on before I was going to get on. I was going to get on before he got on. Started going back and forth. I went up there and did the daily doubles, you know, kind of harassing the personnel manager and, you know, and said, hey, I just got out. How many veterans do you have working here, man? I'm like, you know, come on. And by golly, 4 days into it, he said, you got a job.
Wow.
And so I beat my Marine Corps friend, probably the only time a Navy guy's ever beat a Marine Corps guy to the punch. But anyway, I ended up working. My dad had resigned, so I had an opportunity to buy a house. I was making pretty good money. I was single, so I bought the house. And long story short was, you know how that happens. You buy a house, and along comes the girl.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. how did that all come about?
Yeah, along comes the girl, and, you know, I got the house, and one thing led to another, and Tulsa Welding School completely fell through the cracks, and it became all about Brookings for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, Brookings, Oregon, here we come, you know.
Yeah.
And continue to drill. I drilled over in Medford with the over at the old armory, and then they moved to an isolated school kind of out in the country. And it was interesting. It wasn't quite like the real deal.
Right.
Being F-14 O-level technician, they didn't know what to do with me, really. So they would give me these cross-assigned billets, they called it, where for 2 weeks you'd go do instructor basic course or go someplace, and they would say, what are we going to do with you? I remember they sent me to Whidbey Island 1 year for two weeks.
Interesting.
It was very Whidbey, nice. Yeah. Yeah, and they, you know, pay for you to go up there and hang out, and, you know, they didn't really know what to do with this because I was an F-14 tech, so they, you know, generally speaking, give you a broom to hold you up in the corner. And so I didn't get near as much fulfillment out of my reserve time as I did and it was relatively a peaceful time, but I ended up re-enlisting in the reserves, and it followed me back to the Midwest. And after about 7 years in reserves, I was getting kind of tired of the, especially when they give you an instructor basic course 2 years in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And they haven't been able to catch that in their paperwork. You're going, okay, I think maybe there's a better use of this 2 weeks. But that was that.
So you ended up back in the Midwest for a while?
Yes. Had an opportunity to run a family farm.
Oh, okay.
My dad's parents were moving off the family farm, and it had always been a dream of mine. And before I had gotten out of this service, I had, you know, was thinking about this, and had driven a car back and put it in storage back there that I'd had on the ranch down in Poway. That was where I lived with my buddy, my car buddy and his wife.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And anyway, we ended up, when Champion International closed down, in 1984, we relocated to the Midwest, a little town called Council Grove, Kansas, for 2 years.
I've heard of Council Grove. Yep. There's something happened there at one time.
Yeah, birthplace of the Santa Fe Trail. That's okay. Where they come in for the hardwood, and beautiful little town.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the Flint Hills, you know, with the river runs right through it, the Neosho River. Beautiful place. Yeah. And we ended up there for a couple of years. Things didn't work out with the family farm, some family stuff. And so we relocated to Emporia, Kansas, the birthplace of William Allen White, quite a journalist back in the day.
Interesting.
And at that time, I started using my, quote, Vietnam-era GI Bill.
Yeah.
And so, you know, college became a big part of the equation. I was working in an auto body shop on the side, Rocks Auto Body, and doing the whole welding thing and bodywork thing that I really loved, and doing school. Went to school to be a elementary school teacher with an emphasis on 7th and 8th grade math. And I got into my junior year, and you know how it is. Sometimes when you're looking at your life, you start looking at it through your parents' eyes, and I thought, maybe I want to do ministry, because my dad was a minister.
Sure.
And so I dropped pretty much everything my junior year at Emporia State University and went to a school in Kansas City called Calvary University and graduated there with a degree in pastoral studies and family counseling.
So does that mean you can marry people to this date, or is your certificate still intact?
Well, all that expired. That was back in 1990 when I graduated. But I just recently, through the Universal Church, got certified to be able to. You can, too. You can send
off. I know.
Yes. It works out real well. I'm surprised at how seamless it is. And Curry County recognizes those very nicely. Yes.
All right.
But, I just recently married my youngest daughter to her husband. Yeah, but how cool, huh?
That is
probably
neat.
One of the most pleasurable things I've ever done.
That is so neat. Yeah. It's an opportunity not many people can get. That's
it's
for
one
sure.
of the things I love about radio, Jim. Is it's all about people. So yeah. I mean, and as you probably are well aware, you probably feel like you've been counseled by the people you talk to. You take away good from every conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
You have.
I get more out of every encounter than I put into it.
Right.
So that's the great thing.
Right.
That's the great thing. So you. Did the ministerial thing, and then when did you get back here?
Well, I tell you, what happened was we relocated to South Lake Tahoe. There was a church planning situation there, and I had been working. My final job while I was in school was KFC, which was an eye-opener. I was back in Kansas City. They'd had this experiment where people would call in, and you would do actually home delivery of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Way back then, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Believe it or not, $3 per delivery, minimum wage and tips. I was, I'd do a five-hour shift from 5 to 10 at night.
Right.
$100 every night.
Wow.
And this is back in 89, 90.
That's good money.
Yeah, it was very good money. Yeah. And the little Ford Fiesta, man, 78 Ford Fiesta, and I'm like buzzing around.
I had one of those at one time.
Yeah, great little car, man. Yeah. I'm buzzing around Grandview, it's where Truman's farmhouse was.
Okay.
Just, 1, 2, 3, and dropping those things off and coming back. And it was just a blast anyway. But I was glad to say goodbye to that. And we go to South Lake Tahoe. And,
wow, what a change.
Yeah, it was crazy. Absolutely crazy. The biggest change?
Yeah.
We had farm insurance on our Ford Fiesta, $40 every 6 months for being on a farm.
Right.
And we'd been able to keep that all the way through, even at Kansas City, because of the address, the student home address. We get to South Lake Tahoe. They're like, well, this is one of the highest theft rates and claim rates in the United States. And that same car is going to be about, $480 every 6 months. And then, it was just nuts. So I was like, I'm not so certain I like it here. It's a beautiful place, but it's like, and I'm like thinking, Cindy, my wife, we need to get back to Brookings.
Yeah.
Just let's get back to somebody, a place we know, a place we love. We have family there. And
was it a big discussion about that?
Oh, no. We got into the first winter. I don't know if you're familiar with South Lake Tahoe, this was back in when the lake was about 200 yards from the actual shoreline. They'd had a drought.
Yeah.
And it was very, very interesting. I had picked up a job as a shift supervisor at a KFC there.
Okay.
And doing the open-close thing with split days off, trying to do this little church thing, and meeting myself coming and going. And my wife and kids, we had three at that time, our two oldest daughters and our son, who lives here in Brookings, got on the road and came up to Brookings for Christmas. Well, I couldn't because,
you had to work.
How it is in fast food. You're a slave, man.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Just like, anyway. I'm sure there's some fast food folks here who aren't slave owners, but I felt that way at the time.
Sure.
So anyway, I did have a couple of days off, and of course, it chooses to snow on my way out. I'm in the same little Ford Fiesta.
Holy moly.
And I did a red knuckle drive out of South Lake Tahoe up to Brookings. There was snow all the way to where you turn off of 197 on 101.
Jeez.
There was snow in Brookings. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And we got up here, had a good time. I'm here for a day and a half. I turn around, go zooming back down here. Well, guess what happened while we were gone? The pipes had frozen in this house. And I was like crazy. A good friend of mine at the time showed up down there. He said, Steve, you're going to go nuts if you stay down here. You need to go back to Brookings, man. Get back into your house up there. You got it. It's rented out. Get back into your house. Get things going. And you know how it is. Sometimes you just need a voice of clarity.
And that voice of reason.
Right. And so I gave notice with the people I'd been working with, and gave notice at the restaurant. And boom, back up to Brookings we came in 1991, February of 91.
91, beat me by 2 years. So at this point, we're going to take a little break for a station ID. You're listening to KCIW LP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. You can also catch us on the podcast side of things, and you just get a podcast app on your smartphone, and you can catch up on all the wonderful programming that we have available for you. So now back with Steve Braun. He survived the snowy drive to Brookings, 1991, right?
1991, February of 91. Boy, I tell you, this is an easy town to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a difficult town to get back to.
Interesting.
I mean, anybody's thinking out there about the grass being greener on the other side of the fence, maybe cheaper housing, whatever. If you have any idea about coming back to this community, I mean, it's just difficult. I mean, the infrastructure, the costs, everything's, and the housing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the advantage. We had a renter who was in a long-term lease in our home. And we were very, very fortunate that he was amenable, because of the low rent that we were charging at that time, to finding something else. Really neat guy, Steve Rich and his bride, Casey. Good people. But we were very fortunate to get back here when we did. Came back out, and of course, there's that vocational situation. What are you going to do to, take care of yourself? Everybody that's, we've all asked ourselves that question. You know, if you don't have money coming in, they say, 65% of the income for this area is transfers, dividend payments, and rents that come in from outside the area. Then there's the rest of us that have to figure out how to do the churn and kick up a dollar or two here and there.
Right. Like I tell people, you got to get a toehold. So grab a job, any job, just to get some established time and get to know people, and then you'll advance from there. But it's tough. It is.
It really is. And so, right out of the gate, we had some neat neighbors across the street. They were responsible, basically, for Humphreys, George and Theodore Humphreys, one of the couples that sat down and started the senior center, which is now known as the Activity Center.
Right.
And at that time, George's sister was having some difficulties, so they got me on some kind of a situation where you help out with home health.
Yeah.
And you help take care of the person. Yeah. I would come over there
kind
and
like
help her out.
Like a caregiver kind of situation, yeah.
And I met several interesting people through them, and they're like, well, you should pressure wash houses. You should mow lawns. You should do this. Well, I've always enjoyed mowing lawns. I'm thinking, okay, whatever. And, you start thinking about the possibilities. And at that time, Steve Rich, who had been in our house, said, okay, hey, property management's looking for somebody to be on call to help with cleanups between renters and all this. So I went in and talked to, and one thing led to another, and pretty soon I was busier than I could believe. It was unbelievable. And, of course, I did that for a couple of years. I did a little bit of plumbing through a VA retraining program. Didn't work out, basically, because of one of the persons I had to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But still taught me more than I have any business knowing.
Right.
I mean, it's been very, very helpful.
Yeah.
But long story short is my contract boss at 3 p.m. Property Management was a lady named Vi Croucher.
Okay.
And they also ran Cozy Wood Heating.
Right.
And so she comes to me one day and she says, oh, we're really struggling. We're looking for somebody to run our, we've had some problems. And I'm like, well, at that point I was thinking, okay, I'm getting kind of tired of running around with an old rusty truck and, a mower in the back and hauling stuff to the dump it was okay, but. And so one long story short, I ended up in an interview with Earl Croucher, the son. And got to be the manager, became the manager in 93, a couple of years later, at Cozy Wood Heating out in Harbor.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of 3 years of a very, very interesting experience.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
Well, you can imagine, having never cut a hole in the side of a house, and all of a sudden they tell you you're going to be installing wood stoves and pellet stoves.
Uh-huh.
And you're to go into these homes with confidence. And I'm saying, I'd be more than happy to go into these homes with confidence, but you have a very, very proficient installer up there in Coos Bay. You will need to have him down here at least one day every 2 weeks to do the things that I have arranged for.
Right.
And that worked out real nicely. I think the last year and a half, I became pretty comfortable doing installs. But boy, I tell you, that was a reach. Never had a problem selling them, but it was like, really? You want me to cut holes in people's houses?
Well, at this point, you're starting to sound like the Renaissance man, because you've done a lot of different things. You and I are real similar as far as our life experiences in a variety of stuff. So Cozywood Heating, 3 years. Mm-hmm. Then what happened after that?
Well, I'm at Cozywood Heating, and anyway, long story short is, I was kind of getting to the end of my rope, you know. I mean, the winters were not too bad, the springs, but we didn't sell hot tubs or anything, so it was pretty thin in the summer, except for the planters. There are, the 3% of the population are actually planning ahead for a cold winter, and they come in and buy. Everybody else waits until you have a cold snap, and then, you know, you've got 15 stove sales in one day.
Yeah, it's like roofers.
Right. But anyway, long story short was, we had the radio, you know, anybody that's ever been in business in this town, you have the radio sales folks come in trying to, you know, drum up a little business. And we had a guy back in the day named Joel Buffington. I don't know if you remember Buffington.
I remember Joel, yeah.
Had the old gold Charger.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And he'd come in, and God bless him, he's gone now, but he'd come in and he'd, you know, pitch his deal. And then we had Larry and Lynn Goodman from KCRE, and we had the guy from K-Pod, you know, Mike Moran.
Right. Oh, Mike. Yeah, Mike. He's still around.
Yeah, he's still kicking, man. there's a community-minded individual.
Right.
And we had Larry and Lynn Goodman, who got the Kite Festival going with KCRE back in the day.
Right.
And it was amazing, because Joel's come in, you know, and he's just kind of shuffling in. He says, well, this is what we've done in the past, and we'd really like you to do it again. And nine times out of ten, he'd back into one of Shell Lynn's cars at the car lot next door.
Geez.
Twice in the 3 years I was there. It was like, oh, no. Poor guy. And then you'd have Lynn and Larry come in with just books of things and why you should, you know, this study and this study and this study. Take an hour just to hear everything they had. I remember they showed up at the same time as Mike Moran back when Sweet Old Bill had K-Pod. And they show up and they're at the counter going through this just copious amounts of paperwork. And I was like being polite and listening. And they were nice people. Really, really detailed. And Mike's standing in the back just patiently waiting for, like, seriously, 45 minutes. And Larry and Lynn finally say their goodbyes and walk out, get in their car. Mike comes up to the counter. He says, I'm with K-Pod. I work with Sweet Old Bill. He said, I just want you to know we'll do a good job for you if you want to place advertising. He went out in his car and beat Larry and Lynn out of the parking lot. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, long story short is I'm doing this for 3 years and getting kind of tired of it. And we had a current place show up.
Mm-hmm.
Hearth and Home. Believe
Hearth
it or not.
Right.
Believe it or not, Bob Pieper comes in while I'm at Cozywood Heating with this ugly looking truck and these stoves he's had made down in Mexico, right? These camp stoves. Wants me to carry these camp stoves. And I'm like, well, I'll keep one here, but yeah. And he goes, can a guy make it in this town, do you think? And I'm like, why? And he says, well, I'm wanting to get out of Bend and come down here. I said, well, I tell you what, when you're up in Coos Bay, tell the owner all that. And I told him, I said, don't tell him this, but I'm looking at something else, looking at doing something else. Well, what does he do? He goes up there and my owner calls me up and tells me, hey, I hear you're thinking about doing something else. I'm like, thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
Anyway, about that time, Joel has gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy named Rich Moore comes on the scene with his little 280 Mercedes, comes out here from Rawlins, Wyoming. There's a radio station owner in Rawlins, Wyoming.
Okay.
And he is the sales manager for Vern Garvin at KURY.
Ah.
And he's showing up and he's trying to sell me this stuff, you know, and always has a crummy joke or a corny joke, always wants to see about putting a stove over here at this RV park or at this demo place or whatever. And, you know, it's one of those situations where you're like, okay, I really don't want to see this guy, but he was entertaining as heck. Well, he comes out and he says, hey, Steve, he said, I'm looking for somebody to go out and cross-sell some accounts. You know any gals that would be interesting to go out and cross-sell some accounts? Some of these people I can't even get to. And I'm like, oh, you know, same typical Steve reaction. It's like, yeah, I'm selling stoves for crying out loud, you know? Just leave me alone. So then the next week he comes out and he says, would you be interested in doing radio? Can you believe this? Because I had done a little bit when I was at Calvary.
Right.
Just a little bit until I hurt the engineer's feelings. we won't go there. It was a really weird sort of situation back there. But, and I'm like, well, because I was already planning on doing something else, but radio? He says, well, if you're interested. I said, first thing, you're not looking for me to go out and cross sell, right? We're not making that connection. I'm not the girl you want to go out and cross sell, because that's what he was after. And he started laughing. And from then on, we became pretty good friends. But I tell you, 2 hours later, here comes Vern Garvin and his little Ford Ranger.
Oh, yeah, I remember Vern.
And he said, this is what I can do for you. Well, gee, he offered me like $500 more a month than I had made with commission.
Wow.
And of course, my old owner, God bless him, he's gone now, Don Croucher, had said, don't go there. You're not going to make anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compete, a little friendly competition there for employees, you know, which I've since discovered is a big deal here in Brookings Harbor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
it's a big deal. You know, sniping is probably the best way. Shame on me for saying that. But he comes out and we're talking and he hires me. And one of the terms of endearment was always keep your radio on Curry Radio. And I thought, that's kind of strange. Why would I always keep my radio on Curry Radio? I mean, I pretty much grew up, you know, Big Red, KXGO, classic rock. And, you know, I can remember Curry Radio was the day that Hotel California broke with the Eagles. They played it about, the DJ played it about nine times that day. And it took me about 10 years to start liking the song.
Yeah.
But anyway, long story short was he came out and he was very nice and blah, la-di-da. So I show up. Well, I didn't realize it, but Tom Jones and some folks, some friends, I don't know if you remember this, they had planned on buying Curry Radio. It was an interesting deal.
No, I never
And it was in
that.
The pilot. Actually, had the headline on the pilot, and a lot of things went down while the old owners were out of town. This is like a long time ago.
This is past history.
This is history, yeah.
That's
so anyway, some things
had
gone down, and they'd gone through some records. Most of the people are long gone now anyway, so. And, you know, Vern got back, and he was pretty upset about it, so the deal fell through. And so the guy that I had known, I knew this guy, Tom Jones from church, not the Tom Jones sign maker, but another Tom Jones. I'd known him from church. He'd loaned me some equipment to do my lawn, some lawn stuff on the side. Really nice guy. And I'd followed him at Ray's Food Place. I did handyman work for Ray's Food Place for a while on the side. And he was the morning DJ. And he was frustrated that the deal had fallen through. I mean, you know, they were he was going to make money on both sides with KBSC and Curry Radio. It was going to be a joint enterprise. So anyway, I came in. He goes, what are you here for? I go, I'm going to be the morning guy, I guess. And he goes, you? I go, yeah. And he goes, well, I'm almost out of here. I got to go. Well, this is like 2 days before his end of his 2 weeks notice.
Right.
So I'm like, wow. No computer savvy, Steve. No board savvy, nothing.
Talk about seat of your pants.
Seat of your pants. That's an underestimate.
But we seem to thrive in those situations.
Man, let me tell you. So Vern says, don't say your name. They'll think you're Tom Jones having a bad day.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, Vern was really into engineering. And I was like, okay, I was thinking, Anyway, so I'm doing this. I ended up, long story short, quitting this, kept my cozy wood heating job.
Right.
Because I wasn't sure I was going to like this.
Right.
Twice I told Vern, I said, I'm done. I can't deal with this. It was back then we had to join the AM and the FM at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
We had a 300 CD Pioneer changer. No turntables, but this thing would always get stuck between records, you know, and you'd have to reboot it and play stuff off the CDs. And, you know, I was in over my head. I'll never forget when I first started, I had a lady call me. And she's like, you got to get that guy off the air. And I'm like, why? She goes, oh, he's like, he's just nervous. He just sounds like he's, you know, facing life or death. And I said, well, that's me. And she goes, it can't be you. You sound completely different on the phone. I said, well, light went on. I've never been at a loss for words. I said, well, you know, I've been talking on the phone all my life. She goes, well, talk on the air like you talk on the phone. Yeah. You know who it was? It was the slug lady, Pat Silveria.
Oh, my gosh, Pat, yeah.
I got more constructive criticism from her. I mean, the best constructive criticism. You love these people that care for you, but, you know, pronunciations of cities.
Right.
You know, and my goodness. So she said, well, find your voice for crying out loud. Well, at that time, you know, none of the other guys, Kevin, none of the guys, Don Ritter, they weren't using headphones.
Right.
And so I, you know, somehow I Googled it or I did something and I said, you really should find your voice. Use a headphone, you can get the feedback going. So
yeah.
I put that on and I was talking like I'd been talking. It's like I was in a falsetto. I was like, you know, this is the Mickey Mouse Show with Steve Crappie Prison, you know. And found my voice, and right off the bat, things started to straighten out. You know, I had some things to overcome at the station because I didn't understand the boards, board op, and all that kind of stuff. And there was, you know, folks were kind of reticent to train because of what had just happened with the KBSC, KURY thing blowing up. And by golly, it just started. You remember Don Ritter? He worked with Mort Bender at KBSC doing an old movie show.
Right.
And I was having a real hard time really wrapping my mind around doing it. So I, Don Ritter is on KFUG now. He's down in Crescent City on the low power.
Yeah.
And I came in one Saturday to sit. Well, what was it? I was on 6 to 10 Monday through Saturday. And he would come in and relieve me. And I decided to sit in with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this guy is really enjoying the show. And I said, how do you do it? He says, well, I have people that I've talked to around the community, and it's like a round table.
Right.
And I'm having this conversation with people, and I'm anticipating what they are thinking or what they want to hear. And I'm just enjoying a good conversation around a good meal, kind of, sort of, or around a beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this guy really likes what he's doing. And he's not looking down his nose at me, telling me I don't know how to do this or I don't know how to do that. And things turned around. It was shortly after that I was out at Harris Beach State Park and listening to Curry Radio, like Vern had requested, part of the job description.
Yeah, you do follow directions occasionally.
And it was on a Saturday afternoon when nobody was at the station, and boom, you know, the dreaded dead air.
Oh.
The dreaded dead air. I mean, it's like a wartime situation in radio, you know. It's like all hands on deck, man overboard in the Navy, you know. I mean, right. Seriously, that's what it's like, right?
Yeah.
You just go running. It's fight or flight, man. It's like adrenaline. And so I had two of my kids with me, man. I put the pedal to the metal, and we got back to the station. I come running upstairs, and we had these CDs, you know. And I cranked the CD in, and it's got music. Boy, I don't know what it was. It was like something that didn't belong on the airwaves, but it was music. It was not dead air, right? It was not dead air. And seriously, 3 minutes after I get there, here comes Vern and his Ranger, and then 5 minutes later, here comes Lee, the son, Lee Garvin.
Right.
Comes upstairs, and he goes, you were listening to the radio? I go, yeah, you told me to. He says, I tell people to do that all the time, and they never do. He says, on your next check, it'll be $500 higher.
Wow.
And I went home, I told my wife, I said, wow. Talk about some incentive.
Yeah.
And it was shortly after that he said, do you want an opportunity to make a little bit more money? He said, sales. Would you like to do sales? And he said, I'm going to have Rich Moore throw you a couple of accounts, and then if you want to go out and start seeing people, and or some of these are difficult collections, I'd like for you to start doing that. And you know, that was good for, you know, a good reason to stay in radio.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, here we are 23, 24 years later, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's just nuts. But it's been very entertaining along the way, Jim. Absolutely.
Oh,
entertaining.
Absolutely. Yeah. Incredible, incredible. You know, I remember some of the things that you used to do because of your association with Curry Radio as far as fundraising in the community. So, you know, getting in the bucket truck at the intersection of Checo Avenue and 5th Street, you know, and doing some live remotes from there and things like that. What got you into, like, community?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting, while I have to attribute this to Don Croucher, my boss at Cozywood Heating. He wasn't actually my boss, but he was the father of Earl.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a Lion.
Okay.
Part of the Lions Club.
Very familiar with that organization.
Old school.
Yeah.
And he encouraged me to become a member of it and get involved with the Doughboy. I was the Doughboy chairman and then became the president for a year. Then when they wanted me to be president for a second year in a row, I'm like, come on, man. I was a meeting president because there's no way I could travel to Coquille and all around,
right?
Because you got to be at the station at, you know, 4:30 in the morning. But I would say I have to credit him with community-minded focus. And then, of course, later on, about 2 years after I started working there, Debbie Phillips came to work.
Oh, Debbie, yeah.
At KURY. And really, honestly, an idea person that could actually put the rubber on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the, I was really, honestly, I was excited to do it, but she had everything where it needed to be. She would line up the veterans groups. She would get everything organized, get everything signed off. And she was the magic behind the lift, the 4th of July fireworks fundraiser. She was also the magic behind the Stuff the Bus,
mm-hmm.
the original concept, getting that going, and several other things as well.
Yeah.
Like I said, she was an idea person, still is.
Yeah.
And she could put the pedal to the metal and make it happen. So especially when Howie, her husband, was helping out. Man, mm-hmm. I tell you what, she had somebody that was just right there.
And, he was a dynamo.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fantastic. I remember the first year we did it, Tidewater Contractors was repaving Chetco Avenue.
Okay.
And they had ground everything off. We sat up right in front of Kersey's Hardware with this lift. You know,
right.
And it was supposed to be a 40-foot lift. I think it was a smaller lift because we had to fit it on the sidewalk. And it turned into a balloon war with the Tidewater Contractors. You know, we were having so much fun. Actually, what was happening was it was a fundraiser, and we had Tidewater employers paying us to dust the paver.
Oh, my gosh. Balloons. Yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot of fun. And they were all good spirits. Okay. We had a great time and raised a bucket load of money for the fireworks show. This is back when the fireworks show was... You know, with huge. Mike Moran, and were you part of that?
I wasn't part of it, but I know originally, like, the VVA got involved, you know, for a number of years.
Right.
It was a really big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
But, we used to do a lot of things, you know, the out and abouts, you know, visiting with people live, go out and, you know, get in folks' faces at 2 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's a cool idea.
I'm not so certain you weren't exempted from that with your you had that business down at the port where you
did. Yeah, for Pet's Sake.
Pet's Sake,
I had
the
pet store down in the port there for a while, for sure. Now, didn't you guys have like a broadcast booth during Azalea Festival Parade?
We did. Oh, my goodness.
Remember
that? Some good memories. Boy, you're pulling up some. Yes, and that was one of my duties. Man, I was terrified. I have this remote system on, you know, and we've got Gordy Myra and Sandy Hislop on the back of this on the back of the flatbed in front of Kersey's Hardware, and we have KBSE filming it. Well, we're providing the audio. So my thing is to go out and stop the traffic and interview people in their cars as they're going by.
Kind of like they do in the regular big-time parades.
Right. And, you know, I would walk back up to where Dutch Bros is with marching bands and let people listen to the band, walk alongside them.
Yeah.
So getting ready to do this initially, right?
Right.
And Vern says, get out there, get out there. And he pats me on the side. And, of course, it changed the channel from KURY to KCRE.
Oh, no.
And I've got Renee Shanley Hutzel in my ear, right? Which is cool. I love Renee.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't love Renee right then. So I was completely blind. I'm out there just, you know, hoping a prayer and pure faith that whatever I'm saying is coming through. But only because, you know, it obviously did. Nobody knew there was a problem. But boy, I tell you, it was, boy.
I bet.
You know, I think the final one that we did was when we got rained out. And Les Cohen famously said, we don't get rained out, we just get rained on. And
yeah.
That was back when Aunt Carol had the City Grill. And we were huddling in there, getting our hot chocolate and coffee, trying to stay warm while everything happened.
Oh,
some good memories.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've got a lot of great things that have happened in the community and some not so great things. I wanted to touch base on, have you ever taken advantage of the VA healthcare here since you're a veteran? And if so, what's your experience been?
The VA healthcare, I just got my DD-214 miniaturized, and I got to get that over there and get that on file.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was not aware up until, you know, this area has so many veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had several people say, Steve, get with the program, you know, just by virtue of the fact, you know, if you're in for 4 years and even in the reserves, you have a prioritized number they give you. I mean, you can actually qualify for veterans VA care. I was, like, shocked.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the way they pitched it to us back in the day was you had to stay in for 20 years to retire to get health and medical benefits. But apparently that's not the problem.
Nope, not at all. Yeah. So I'm glad you're taking those steps because it really can be a nice stopgap in there, and another, you know, different kind of medical insurance that you normally wouldn't be able to take advantage of. So that's good. Good on you.
Exactly. You know, I am very impressed with the attention that's being given to veterans. You can just hope that the follow through is as strong as, you know, the amount of press releases we're getting concerning veterans and their, you know, new programs that are being designed for them so they can access care. They can access, you know, their medical records from back when they were in to see if they qualify for disability. There's so many tools out there now that can be accessed.
Right.
And really, it just comes down to visiting your veteran services officer.
Yeah.
And,
getting the lay of the land, and you know, with anything having to do with government, be persistent.
Right.
You know, that's I was having a conversation before we started the show, and it's like the VA, like any other governmental institution, wants to wait you out, kind of thing. You know, if you're, especially if you're applying for certain benefits and things like that. So just be patient. Find an advocate. Find fellow veterans that have kind of, you know, wended their way through the system and know how it works. That's the important thing.
Now, are you still driving veterans back and forth?
Yeah, I am. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I still provide that service for veterans. So.
Nice.
And I get more out of it than I put into it, so that's the cool thing.
That's that reverse counseling.
I know. It's cool. Amazing. It's amazing. Over the years, what are some of the better things you've seen about Brookings, and what would you like to see changed?
What would I like to see changed about Brookings? Wow. That's a good one. I think it's neat that we're finally getting, you know, one of the things that always tore me up was to see families leave, that especially older couples that moved here because it was so beautiful, and then they felt like they'd be better off in Grants Pass or Medford because of health care.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that happen so many times. People contributing to the community in spades. But I would say having the emergency room opening up, I think that's a really, really cool thing. I'm glad to see that they granted an exclusion and that can happen, because for many years that just was not going to happen no matter what.
It was a long road to hoe on that one.
Right. And some of the other things, that's one of those questions that my brain would like to think about overnight, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I love this area. Good question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll kind of leave it at that.
Speechless.
Yeah. Other than the fact that, you know, anybody who might be interested, there's plenty of opportunities to volunteer.
You know, something I would really like to see?
Huh.
As a kid, when we moved here, I was in the third grade. And one of my favorite things to do was to get together with my buddies and ride our bicycles up to Loeb Park. I would love to see a bike trail from Azalea Park along the river, some kind of right of way, up to Loeb State Park. I will guarantee you there would be, on a sunny day, 35 or 40 bicycles on that with a little picnic spots along the way. I have thought about that over and over and over again, how cool that would be. One of my daughters lives in Moscow, Idaho, and it's just about 15 minutes from Pullman, Washington, and they have the neatest, it's on an old railroad track right away.
Mm-hmm.
And even on days when it's 30 degrees, you'll see 15 or 20 people, of course, they're college towns, on their bicycles or skateboards.
Right.
I just think that would be a really cool thing. I think our area really lends itself to that. I mean, kudos for the path from Brookings to Harris Beach.
Yeah.
But can you imagine being able to ride along the Chetco River and
that just, would be way cool.
Yeah,
that'd be
so
good.
I have not seen that. I've not seen that broached yet. You just heard it from the deep recesses of Steve Braun's mind.
All right, and on that note, we're going to draw things to a close. You have been listening to Steve Braun, man about town, entrepreneur, Renaissance man, veteran. I got to know you better, I think, today in 1 hour than all the years we've been crossing paths in this town. And it's been a real pleasure to have you here on this first edition of Our Veteran Community. Steve, thank you so much for coming in.
Likewise, Jim.
Really appreciate it. All right. You take care. I'll see you again.
Sounds good. Thanks for your work. I've always enjoyed your work as well.
I appreciate that. We all make a better community.
The opinions expressed here were those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in the program.